Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into the world of design. And honestly, it's a story with a, well, a truly jaw-dropping price tag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, picture this. December 15th, 2005, Christie's Auction House in New York City. Buzzing.
Okay.
The Star. This really sleek Carlo Mellino table, designed 1948, you know, classic, mid-century, modern.
Right, beautiful stuff.
Exactly. So everyone's expecting maybe it breaks $1 million, which is already substantial, right?
Sure, for a table, even a Mellino.
But then the gavel falls, and it wasn't 1 million, or two, or even three.
Go on.
$3.824 million, it like smashed the high estimate by 20 times.
Wow.
Okay.
So, okay, let's unpack this. A single table, almost $4 million. What actually happened here? How did we get to that point?
Well, it's fascinating because people in the design world immediately saw it. Joshua Haldeman, he was Sotheby's head of 20th century design then.
Yeah.
He called it a breakout price. And he didn't just mean expensive. He meant it showed these mid-century pieces weren't just, you know, old furniture anymore.
It was something else. Exactly. They were suddenly seen as extremely important in the history of design. And to collectors, kind of like fine art.
Ah, okay.
So that sale, that Mellino table, it wasn't just a blip. It was like a signal, a real turning point. The market for this stuff, which had been pretty niche, was going into overload. Prices just went supernova, as he put it. It changed the whole game.
Supernova. That's quite a word for it. So that's our mission for this deep dive then. How did this style, mid-century, modern, go from being, well, kind of forgotten to that kind of value?
Yeah. How did it get so popular again?
We'll define what it even is, trace its journey, you know, from being out of fashion back to being everywhere, and figure out what drove this huge resurgence. Right up to today, where collecting it is definitely an expensive pursuit.
For sure.
So let's start right there. Mid-century modern, what are we actually talking about?
Okay. So broadly, it's the design style, graphics, architecture, furniture from the middle part of the 20th century.
Middle part. Okay.
Think clean lines. Often very organic shapes, but simple, functional. Big focus on materials that were new back then.
Like the Eames chair.
Exactly.
Right.
Charles and Ray Eames, Serenin, George Nelson, Arno Jacobson. Those are the big names. They were experimenting with molded plywood, fiberglass, plastic, steel.
Stuff that could be mass produced.
Yeah, that was part of the idea. Post-war optimism, a new way of living, make good design accessible. But there's always this date debate.
Oh, people argue about the years.
Oh, yeah. Constantly. Some say it's a really wide window, like 1933 to 1965.
Mm.
Captures the lead up and the peak.
Okay, that's quite a span.
But then you have the purists. And they'll argue, no, no, it's specifically the post-war decade. Say, 1947 to 1957.
Does it really matter which dates you pick?
Well, for collectors and historians, yeah, kind of. It changes how you categorize things. The context. Is something late Bauhaus or early MCM? But for most people,
it's just the look.
Right. And whatever the exact dates, there's zero doubt the style is, you know, very much in vogue now and has been climbing since the 80s, really.
Mm. It feels so timeless now. It's weird to think it wasn't always popular.
Oh, absolutely not. It really fell off a cliff in the late 60s. And by the 70s, it was just not desirable at all.
Really? Why?
Think about the 70s aesthetic. It was all like maximalism, shag carpets, dark wood paneling.
Right. Totally different vibe.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-century felt kind of stark, maybe even cold or old-fashioned compared to that.
Yep.
I mean, people were literally giving away original Eames chairs because they looked dated.
Oh, wow. If only they knew.
Tell me about it. So much of this stuff ended up on the curb or buried in basements.
Yeah.
Considered basically worthless.
So from worthless to that nearly $4 million table, how does that happen? What turned the tide?
Well, the first big step was actually just giving it a name.
A name.
Yeah. And here's where it gets really interesting. The name mid-century modern, it sounds so official, right?
Sure.
It was actually coined by a writer, Kara Greenberg, in 1984 for her book, Mid-Century Modern, Furniture of the 1950s.
Okay, so she wrote the book on it.
Right. But get this. She later admitted she just made up the term herself.
No way.
Yeah, as it sort of sounded right.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? But despite that casual origin, the term completely stuck. And her book was a huge hit, sold like 100,000 copies.
Oh.
And that book, it really brought the style back into people's minds, both in the design world and, you know, more generally.
So timing was key.
Perfect timing. Because around 83, 84, when it came out, there was this little bit of tentative interest starting up again. Maybe people were getting tired of the 70s look.
Okay.
Greenberg's book didn't just showcase the furniture. It gave that little flicker of interest, a name, a definition. Suddenly it was a thing. Mid-century modern. You could talk about it, collect it. It legitimized it again. That was the spark.
Okay, so the 80s gave us the name and the spark, but the 90s,
yeah,
that's when things really started moving, market-wise.
Oh, definitely. The 90s is when it went from niche interest to being widely desirable. Collectors started paying serious attention.
You could see prices changing.
Dramatically. Stuff that was genuinely considered outdated and close to worthless, maybe 20 years before,
yeah,
suddenly selling for tens of thousands of dollars. It wasn't gradual. It felt like it exploded.
Any specific examples?
Yeah, like a George Nelson marshmallow sofa. Iconic piece.
Yeah, very distinctive.
Totally ignored for ages.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in 1999, one sells for $66,000 at auction.
$66,000 in 99?
Yeah, which seemed completely unthinkable then. Showed real collector heat. Of course, you know, our source notes, it still pales in comparison to the Molino table price later.
Sure, but still a huge jump.
Absolutely. And you started seeing galleries, auctions, dealers, all specializing in 20th century design. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just used furniture anymore. It was collectible.
And then came the reissues, right? That must have changed things too.
Big time. So by the early 90s, yeah, a lot of these classic designs weren't even being made anymore. They've been discontinued for years.
But now people wanted them again.
Exactly. Popularity's rising. Prices for originals are climbing. So manufacturers like Herman Miller or Knoll, they saw an opportunity.
And started making them again.
Right. They reissued the classics, the Eames lounge chair, Serena's womb chair, stuff like that.
Which must have been great for people who just liked the style but couldn't afford, like, a vintage original.
Totally. It made the look accessible, introduced it to a whole new generation who'd maybe never seen these designs before outside of, you know, old photos.
Did that hurt the prices of the originals?
Well, it's complicated. The source material points out that, yeah, in many cases, it had a negative impact on the price of the original.
Because you could just buy a new one.
Kind of. If you just wanted the look, maybe a new one was fine. Especially for more common pieces. But interestingly, it also changed the dynamics of the market.
How so?
It ended up driving up the price of originals that had never been reissued. And it made the distinction between vintage and new really important.
Ah, so rarity and originality became even more valuable.
Precisely. It created this sort of two-tier market. You had the accessible reissues for the mainstream, and then the highly sought-after investment-grade originals for serious collectors.
Mm-hmm.
It actually fueled both sides of the market.
That is a fascinating dynamic. Okay, so the 90s set up the market, then we hit the 2000s, and pop culture gets involved.
Oh, massively.
Yeah.
Mass media had a huge impact. You had design magazines, sure, like Wallpaper, Dwell.
Yeah.
They were definitely popularizing the style among people already interested in design.
Right, educating the enthusiasts.
But the really big thing, the one that pushed it truly mainstream, was probably something nobody predicted.
Which was?
A TV show.
Mad Men.
Ah, of course, Mad Men.
Yeah, debuted in 2007, set in a 1960s New York ad agency. And the sets? Oh my God, the sets were incredible.
Meticulously done.
Absolutely. They accurately reflected the styles of the time, and they just nailed the mid-century modern look. It was everywhere.
And the show itself was just, yeah, exactly. It became noted for being the epitome of cool.
Yeah.
The clothes, the attitude, the whole aesthetic.
Yeah.
And that aesthetic was drenched in mid-century design. Don Draper's office, his apartment.
Eames chairs everywhere.
All of it. So Mad Men didn't just show the furniture. It, like, romanticized the whole era. It made that lifestyle, that look, seem incredibly aspirational.
Hmm. Connecting it to success and sophistication.
Totally. And it introduced this style to a brand new audience. Mm-hmm. Millions of people who maybe didn't know Eames from IKEA. And they loved it.
You really did start seeing it everywhere after that.
You did. Partially thanks to Mad Men, mid-century design started popping up everywhere in film and TV. It just became part of the visual language for cool or stylish.
Were there other things going on in the 2000s culturally that helped along besides Mad Men?
Oh, for sure. Mad Men was like pouring gasoline on a fire that was already smoldering.
Okay.
You had the rise of minimalism, people wanting cleaner spaces, less clutter.
Mm.
Mid-century fits that perfectly.
Right. Functional, not fussy.
Exactly. Then there was growing interest in sustainability. Buying vintage, well-made furniture instead of, you know, disposable stuff. That felt like a good choice. And these pieces were built to last.
Good point. Eco-conscious, cool.
And finally, the internet. Online marketplaces, design blogs, Suddenly, it was way easier for anyone to learn about this stuff, find it, buy it. It wasn't just for insiders anymore.
It really democratized access.
Completely. All these things kind of came together in the 2000s.
Wow. What an incredible journey. From being the height of post-war style to being literally tossed out in the 70s.
Yeah, seen as totally worthless.
Then getting a catchy made-up name, rediscovered by collectors, blown up by the market, and then cemented by pop culture. It's quite the story.
It really is. And its popularity, it's pretty much grown ever since those first sparks in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And honestly, looking around now, it shows no signs of slowing down. It's still everywhere.
Which brings us to a final thought for you, listening. The look, the aesthetic appeal of mid-century modern, that's obvious. It's elegant, it's functional.
Yeah, it just works.
But what is it about this particular design movement? Why does it keep capturing people's imagination? How does it defy expectations like that crazy Molino price? How can a TV show bring it roaring back like that?
Mm.
Maybe it's more than just the chairs and tables. Maybe it taps into something about, I don't know, authenticity, quality, maybe even a kind of nostalgia for a certain vision of the future.
It definitely seems to resonate on a deeper level.
It's just a great reminder that really good design, if it gets rediscovered, can become genuinely timeless.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, incredibly valuable, still very much an expensive pursuit, as our sources said, if you're looking to collect the real icons today. Something to think about.